You are Locked On Jaguars, your daily Jacksonville Jaguars podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Zach Goodall. Make sure to throw me a follow on Twitter at Zach_Goodall, as well as my co-host, Chris Thornton. You can find him at MisoCristofo. And Chris, I feel like we've done like one show together in the past month. That wasn't the way we were planning on going out, with you, you know, exiting soon. However, if there's one positive to draw as we wind down to your final days, it's that the show is taking off. I mean, a lot of great work has been done by, I mean, obviously both of us, we both contributed over time and really seen the growth of this show. So I think, you know, with the abundance of reviews, all the new subscribers, interaction on Twitter that both of us have collected, I think it's a great way as, you know, your time is starting to dwindle down here.
Yeah, I don't know how the saying goes, but it's like, never leave something better, or I'm trying to think of the words, but basically we took this podcast and you'll still be with it, but I'll be leaving it in better shape than how I found it. So, that's a positive. I'm glad I can say that I was a part of that. We've really turned this pod around, because when we took on, nobody knew what a Locked On Jaguars was.
But now we're upsetting
Wayne Weavers in brackets. We're voted, you know, best radio show in Jacksonville over guys like Jaguars Today and stuff like that. So I'd say we've done a pretty good job in the year and a half, 2 years that we've been doing this.
And you're definitely really important, and you're going to be remembered for that. So for that, I thank you. This is not his goodbye, by the way. This is just a nice little intro to start the show as we're finally back together on a show. But we do have some Jaguars-related stuff and not as much sentimental stuff to get to. We're going to start with some news that's come out of the owners and coaches meetings. Doug Marrone did a press conference today, talked a lot of different things. A couple of important things that came out of today in general were some updates on Marquise Lee, Jaguars receiver who just blew his knee to shreds just last preseason, week three against the Atlanta Falcons, as well as the Jaguars look to be yet again involved in joint practices this upcoming preseason. We're going to talk about the practices later. We're going to knock out the Lee stuff now because this probably will provide a little bit more discussion. So Doug Marrone came out and said that they're thinking Lee will be back in the late preseason, which means really at least a full year from injury until he's finally back and participating. And that's now, not so great.
Now, when he says back in preseason, does that mean practicing again or does he mean like playing?
I would assume practicing. I think that's okay, when would want a timetable.
So that means Marquise Lee's probably not even going to – they're probably going to put him on short-term IR to start the year, I'm sure, then. Give him 6 weeks, come back near the bye week in the middle.
We'll have to see. That's going to be something to keep our eyes peeled for. But one thing for certain is, like, look at guys in the past. Adrian Peterson tearing his ACL in the final game of the year, starting week one of that next year and grabbing the rushing title. Carson Wentz tearing his ACL late in the year in 2017, coming back in like week three of 2018. Like, normally these type of recoveries, you know, they're starting to get a little faster. And that does not appear to be the case for Lee. Obviously, he's dealt with a lot of injuries during his career, and this does not sound like it's really great, especially for a receiver who's out there making a lot of cuts. He's a guy that likes to cut across the middle of the field, so got to use that knee a bit.
To be fair, I don't think Lee was just an ACL. I think he
he was everything.
MCL, meniscus, like that thing was probably just like Teddy Bridgewater esque. So, right. On timetables, I don't think you can use an ACL because an ACL is such an easy fix now. You just go and get a surgery, you're back in 6 to 8 months.
Well, that's what I mean. That's what I mean, though, is that it's obviously more concerning than your typical knee injury.
Yeah, but as far as we're concerned, he could be ahead of schedule for all we know. I mean, we had Dr. Bates on at the beginning, and he kind of speculated on what the injury could be. But I guess we never really asked him what a timetable could be for that injury. But I mean, as long as he comes back healthy and is able to function, then I guess that's all that really matters. I'm sure. I mean, Chris Conley being signed, I feel like that's going to be a good signing for the wide receiver group, because now you're going to have what, DJ Chark, Keelan Cole, Chris Conley, who are some other guys? Oh, DD Westbrook.
Right.
I don't know if I already said him. So that, I mean, that's a decent four. And then if you draft a guy, it wouldn't surprise me if they brought back Jadon Mickens if they get another injury in the wide receiver room or want depth. Pray to God they don't bring Rashad Green back.
Right, that's the last thing they need.
Or maybe they promote somebody from their practice squad.
They had a shot at Alan Lazard last year, but then
he's a Packer, right?
Yeah, great use of those resources. Because I think Lazard could have been a good player, but. Do you think that this news could affect their draft plan at all? Because they say they're comfortable at receiver. Then they go out and sign Conley. Obviously, we don't really know what we have out of these guys. We think Dede is going to be great because he was really freaking good with Blake Bortles at his quarterback. So there's just untapped potential there. And he's already proven himself to be at least a really good possession, you know, number two guy.
And he's going to be in a new offense. He's
exactly.
A balance, probably more pass first now than run first.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't surprise me if we see pass run compared to your pass first, run pass. But that's encouraging. I don't think the Marquise Lee thing affects her draft, because they've known since the injury that he probably wasn't going to be ready for the season. So I doubt internally that really affects anything. Now, if he would have had like a major setback or something, then sure. But I still think if they wanted a receiver earlier, or in the earlier rounds, they're still going to go receiver.
Do you think that that's likely, though? Regardless.
I would be surprised if we finish day two and they do not have a receiver drafted.
I actually am kind of the opposite. I don't view it as that big of a need. I just don't, because there's untapped potential in that room, and there's definitely, you know, some proof in terms of Dede. A guy you just signed in Chris Conley on a bargain deal, familiarity with Foles. You know, the sky's the limit for Chark. We know his athletic profile. We saw some glimpses last year. We saw positives 2 years ago from Keelan Cole and a negative 2018. I'm sure they're going to, you know, keep him around to hope he bounces back. But I think that having those bodies and all the potential there will make it not as much a priority as other positions. I think if the value is there, for in the third round, there's a guy that they had as a second rounder, then sure, that's where they definitely consider it. Kind of like, I mean, what happened with Chark last year? They had a first on him, and they took him in the second, because value. Will Richardson, they had, it had to have been at least a third. They had a lot of, they called him a value pick, took him in the fourth. So if that's
Ronnie
the business.
Harrison, they thought was a steal. They
exactly.
Had a high grade on him, too.
So if they're in that business yet again, then I could definitely see it. And what makes that nice is that it's going to be such a packed wide receiver class on day two. There's so many different guys that you could take on day two and get a talented player.
That's why odds are that could happen. That's why I don't think they don't get a guy, especially having, if they didn't have the second, third round pick, then this would be a completely different strategy. But since they have two third round picks, and that's really the sweet spot where it seems like for a lot of these receivers, because this is a loaded class for those middle rounds. I think there's got to be at least one or two people that they highly covet or like more than others that are going to fall to one of their spots, whether it be their first third round pick or their second third round pick. So I don't know. I'd be really surprised if they didn't draft a receiver by the end of day two.
I just also don't think they will or should view it as a priority. Like I said, obviously the value's there, then I can see it. But if they got higher value on an edge player at that point, I'd rather have that rotational edge than another receiver, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But
you also have to, well, I mean, you can't really factor this in all your decision makings, but it seems like the Jags really like having receivers who like to get hurt. So it wouldn't hurt to have maybe some promising depth instead of guys like Monte Crockett.
I agree.
Come in and
I definitely agree. No, you can't go wrong with a Monte Crockett, right? So we're going to keep it on offense in our next segment, but we're going to talk about a different position, a different pass-catching position, tight end. Put out a report on TJ Hawkinson. he absolutely should be the pick at 7 if they're not going QB. A lot of folks don't like that value on a tight end, but we're here to tell you why that's a bad take to have, and we'll tell you right after these messages. Today's episode of Locked On Jaguars is brought to you by A1 Sliders. Are you one of hundreds of coastal Northeast Florida homeowners who struggle every day to open and close your sliding glass door? Why spend all the money it takes to replace your sliding glass door when Tony and the gang at A1 Sliders could save you money and repair your door for you? A1 Sliders is licensed and insured. They offer free estimates, upfront pricing, and will help you save on heating and cooling costs in your home from leaky sliding glass doors. And at A1, your schedule comes first. A1 Sliders is a fan of the Locked On Jaguars podcast, and in partnering with us, they will give you $25 off of any repair you order, no limit. Just mention Locked On Jaguars before getting your repairs done. Call A1 Sliders now for your free sliding glass door repair estimate at 386-538-6835. Or check out their website at www.a1sliders.com. That's 386-538-6835 and www.a1sliders.com. And don't forget to mention Locked On Jaguars for $25 off of any repair you order. A1 Sliders, licensed and insured, LLC, covers the Jacksonville area from Fernandina Beach through New Smyrna Beach, based out of Palm Coast, Florida. Contact for more details on location and any questions you may have. So I get it. Not too often do you see a tight end going top 10. Not too often do you see a tight end being an all-pro in their rookie year. You shouldn't use that history to argue against someone that's widely considered a top 10 prospect in their class, in TJ Hockenson, to come in with value at 7th overall as a top 10 prospect at your absolute biggest need on offense at this point, and offers the potential to be a true, you know, top-tier game changer at his position. I just don't understand why there's so much like hate on the value of a tight end there, because people don't realize this. When you have that game-changing tight end, like so few teams have, with the athletic intangibles, the size, the two-way ability, like Kelce, like Ertz, like Gronk, who just retired, like Chris's favorite, George Kittle, like, that's it. Like, can you think of any other tight end that's in that tier? Because after that, it's such a drop-off.
Yeah. No, like I said, you have the Travis Kelce's, the Zach Ertz's, now retired Rob Gronkowski's, George Kittle's up and coming. Those are your premier tight ends. But tell you what, it's definitely a position that if you got it, it makes your offense just that next level. I mean, look at the offenses that have those guys. Like, I saw somebody, they're talking about George Kittle today. They're like, he broke the record for receiving yards by a tight end and with a parking attendant at quarterback. Like, having a good tight end can make or break an offense. Travis Kelce, you know, 100 yards a game, it seems like. Zach Ertz, 10-plus catches a game. Red zone threat. Like, they're, like, some people like to call them the icing on the cake, but really for some of these offenses, they are the cake. Like, you have the game plan against, like, okay, if we don't contain like Travis Kelce, like, we are screwed.
Do you remember? And so we played three of these teams in the past year, and dating back to January of 2018, we played one of the tight ends that I'm about to mention twice, in Rob Gronkowski, Travis Kelce, and Zach Ertz. Every single week heading in, it was a discussion by media, the team, and fans alike. Sure, they had Carson Wentz at quarterback in Philadelphia. Sure, they had the electric Pat Mahomes at quarterback in Kansas City. Sure, they had the greatest quarterback of all time in Tom Brady in New England. But every single person asked, who's going to cover that tight end? You heard it about Tyreek Hill, because he's one of the fastest players in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But there was legitimate discussion of how could they possibly shut down tight ends like that. They got to go double coverage. Oh, last time it worked with Gibson, but like, should they keep doing that? What are they going to do? Like, you weren't having those conversations about most of the other players, even considering their quarterbacks, who were some of the best in the league. Like, it was obviously worth the discussion, but everyone went immediately to the skill group and said, who's going to cover these tight ends? Like, that's a first-round value right out the gate, because those type of players will single-handedly change every single opponent's game plan around your offense. And, I mean, you're drafting a tight end in top 10, someone who's considered a top 10 player. Like, the expectation is that's what'll happen. Sure, there's a bit of a learning curve, but, like, he's a top, T.J. Hockenson's a top 10 prospect. Noah Font's probably a top 15 prospect. Like, the expectation is totally fine to have that of them, because that's where their value is, and that's how true we project them to be dynamic in the next level.
That is where the NFL is going right now. People, I think the two most undervalued positions in the game right now are safety and tight end. And I think they go hand in hand now, because this past free agency, we were like, the safety deals that were going out were just crazy. Like Landon Collins, what, like 75 mil or something like that?
Way too much. Years? Way too much for Landon Collins, because he is to me a box safety.
But teams are paying these guys because a lot of their jobs now revolve around stopping these elite tight ends, because the tight end group is becoming more important. So
right.
As tight ends get better, you're going to see safety deals going up.
And I'm only saying that about Landon, because I think he's a little more limited. But no, like Tashaun Gibson, for what he did against Rob Gronkowski, like deserved that game should have put him up in, you know, top safety discussion alone. And he was so overshadowed here. I don't think, you know, as a whole, matching up against quicker receivers, he was nearly as great. But you don't find guys like Tashaun Gibson, especially at Gibson's size, coming in and shutting down tight ends like Rob Gronkowski does. That's hard. That is rare.
And Tashaun's going to have himself a hard year this year if the Jags get Hockenson, because that means six times this year, Gibson's going to have to go against Eric Ebron and Andrew Luck twice, mm-hmm. which that was a dynamic tight end duo last year. I think he had like 12 touchdowns.
Right.
If the Jags get Hockenson, it's going to be Hockenson and Foles and flip system. That could possibly be a dangerous duo. And then now I guess it's going to be Ryan Tannehill probably to Delanie Walker. And Delanie Walker a few years ago, I know he was hurt last year, I believe, was probably like a top five tight end in the NFL. So these safeties are being signed and drafted to stop these tight ends, because the tight end position is becoming a premier skill position, whether people want to accept it or not. It is becoming a premier position, and that is why I am 100% okay with, and I encourage it, I want them to do it, is take a tight end like T.J. Hockenson at 7, because he has all the intangibles. It's on the tape. It's on, you know, his athletic scores, his box scores, whatever. It is all there that he has the comings and makings to being the next elite tight end in the NFL. And that is something that if you want to win a Super Bowl, you need to have all of the, you know, the guys like that. Like, having a tight end like that is such a luxury to have on your offense. But almost at this point, it's a necessity if you want to keep up with how offenses are moving in the NFL.
Also, something I want to mention, because obviously we've talked about the injuries in the past. This is just an extra little nugget if anyone needs any more convincing. T.J. Hockenson was a two-way player, played basketball and football in high school.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that on Sunday Night Football.
And also played 3 years in college. Never missed a game. So just in case anyone is worried about, you know, any possible injuries, because those are hard to project, he's got a good history. That's going to stick out to the Jaguars no matter what. Compared to some other tight ends in the class that might have some injury issues, that's going to stand out. Another thing that should stand out, in Philadelphia, they had, this past year, two tight ends worth anything, right? Like, in Goddard and Ertz, obviously. In 2017, they had three. So, obviously, I mean, well, really two in the receiving game. Selleck, at that point, was just more of a blocker. But Ertz and Burton. So, two tight ends are obviously, you know, really nice to have, but then you need to look at the rest of their offense. They had four or five pretty solid contributing receivers of different skill sets. They had three to four running back committees both years, and that's just their value as a true committee of running backs. So when you look at it, you've got about, like, you know, 12 receivers all in all in throughout the passing game, and Foles targeted tight ends who had the least amount of you know, numbers on the roster in comparison to those other positions, he targeted them a full third of the time. Like, he inflates the value of the tight end position alone as a quarterback. So if you're making him a franchise quarterback, you should probably invest in the position that he truly inflates the production of. So that should only increase the value of tight end in this offense even more than the average offense.
And especially, well, Flip wasn't the play caller when he was with the Eagles, but no, that's the hitting the point on the head right there is you have a quarterback that his tendencies show that he will check down to the tight end. You know, the tight end is his safety blanket. So why not give him the best tight end in the draft, who also could be like a top tight end in the league if you utilize him right? Why not do that instead of drafting a, you know, Rashawn Gary at 7 or, you know, a right tackle, Juwan Taylor at 7?
Which I'm not as big a fan of his value at this point.
Take the guy in TJ Hockenson, who maybe in years past might be a reach, but at this point, that is a dire need. And, you know, the chips just keep adding up. And I'm hoping it's almost like Nick Foles at this point, which I'm not seeing as many people mock Hockenson to the Jags anymore, but you know how when the Foles to Jacksonville news started, we kind of tried to shoot it down because it's like, oh, it's too obvious, it won't happen. Well, just like the Nick Foles to Jacksonville, I hope the TJ Hockenson to Jacksonville also happens. Like, oh, it's too obvious of a pick or too obvious of a pick. It won't happen. Like, it needs to happen at this point. Like I said, I'll be pounding. I've loved TJ ever since I've started watching him after George Kittle left. I was like, okay, this guy is like George Kittle 2.0, maybe even a little bit better. I kind of won't argue that because I thought Kittle was grossly underutilized at Iowa, but I won't go off on that tangent. But a guy like TJ Hawk, they don't come around often. It seems like they have the last two drafts, but that's because Iowa is tight end U right now. So TJ Hockenson at 7, you won't see me deviate that probably from that take until draft night.
People also say that there's a history of tight ends not going too early and point to Rob Gronkowski as a second round pick. I wonder if people remember that Gronk was like definitely talked up in like the top 15 at that point. He missed almost if not all of his junior season before he declared with back surgery. It wasn't just a small little injury that knocked him down boards. It was a pretty important one. But, I mean, we view Gronk as, like, the best tight end of all time at this point. Like, that's an argument. And his contributions two ways put his value up that high. And if any team took him that high, he clearly would have been worth it at this point. The injury is what, you know, pushed him down a bit. So if you're a believer that Hockenson can be that tier of tight end, that tier of tight end is worth a top 10 pick in this NFL in the way that offenses have grown. I truly believe that. I know Chris does as well. We are both, if it's not Haskins at 7, if they're not going to double down on quarterback to have the short and long term figured out, it's Hockenson or bust to me at this point. It's double H or bust. Haskins, Hockenson or bust for me at this point. Chris, pretty sure you feel the same way.
I think at this point I'm Hockenson over Haskins at 7.
I think that's a fine opinion to have.
In our last pod that we actually recorded together, I gave my reasoning as to why I think I wouldn't take Haskins at 7 even if he's there. Because I think you're essentially wasting 2 years of his affordability if you do commit to Foles until he's not a cap casualty. And if Foles is playing great football, then you're just wasting more and more of a first-round pick. So obviously that is if things go well. If things don't go well, then obviously hindsight will be 20/20 in that case. But there's some good quarterback classes coming up. So if it looks like Foles isn't the guy, you have a few more drafts to hit on it. So I think at this point I would take Hawk over Haskins. If you made me choose, I'm probably going that way.
I still agree with Phil on the idea of like, I mean, value be damned on the cap table. I mean, Haskins sat for 2 years and learned behind QBs that admittedly he was better than at Ohio State and had no issue with it because he's a guy that is all about the book. Like,
I'm not worried about Haskins. Like, I'm not worried about him, like, you know, getting butthurt on the bench or whatever. It's just,
I think it's just more like it's a perfect opportunity with a guy that won't be like Josh Rosen who wants to be challenged like that. Like, it's an ideal world. I don't think it's likely at 7 anyway, but I still think that if I'm given the choice in a vacuum, I'd still go Haskins and just have QB figured out for 15 years. I obviously see why they won't and why I think it's definitely likely that they won't. In which case, like, yeah, you build around the strengths of the guy you just guaranteed the most amount of guaranteed money in franchise history to. And tight end Hockenson fits that mold.
I almost, this kind of just dawned on me, but I don't think this front office takes another quarterback, because if this quarterback that they take this year has to play, that means the guy that they just paid record money to isn't playing very well. And I don't think they'd live to see Haskins take a snap as a Jaguar, barring like a season ending injury for Foles.
You make a really good point.
I don't think they draft a quarterback because they won't live to see him play. So I think to save themselves is they're going to, hopefully they're smart enough to where they're going to want to make Foles as comfortable and productive as possible. It wouldn't surprise me if they went tight end just to make his job easier, for the sole fact that this might be their, I think they got their quarterback. They got Foles. Like, I don't think they wanted to risk going into the draft and not getting their guy. So they put all their chips on the table with Foles. And I don't think they would possibly risk a very pivotal first round pick in their possible last year of their tenure here on a quarterback that they might never even see the field.
I think that you just raised another great reason as to why they won't do it. I still would. But yeah, I mean, you're making all the points that are just really obvious at this point, which I see.
I don't know how I didn't think of that before.
Fair. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the news of Jacksonville and Baltimore having joint practices. We'll be back after these messages. So we'll keep this one short and we'll wrap it up because we have no other info to go on it. Looks like the Jaguars and Baltimore Ravens will be having joint practices this year in Baltimore. It will be the second year in a row. Or will it be the third year in a row that Jacksonville did not have joint practices in Jacksonville? Last year it was with the Vikings. I believe the year before it was actually at New England. So that would be 3 years in a row. It dates back to, I think, when Tampa Bay was here. What will be 4 years ago when they last had some here. Kind of sucks for the fans. Fans obviously want that. I'm not the biggest fan of joint practices anymore. I think it's a cool interview opportunity if you're trying to get both sides there, which is the only reason why I'd want it here is to be able to go and talk to someone like Lamar Jackson, obviously. I feel like that'd be a fun story with Jacksonville passed on him and needed a QB a year later. But and there's injury risk a lot more when you're treating it almost like a game, going up against another team that you can't really control the practice like that. And like how much benefit are you getting from that extra contact with another team when other teams practice by themselves? I don't know. I just haven't seen the benefits of it in the multiple years that they've been doing it.
If anything, it causes more problems than, you know, you get those, like, we got those lovely sound bites from the Buccaneers and Jaguars joint practices of verbal frustration between Allen Robinson and Mercedes Lewis with Blake Bortles. And then you kind of get scuffles and that leads to possible injuries and stuff. So I can agree with you that it's kind of fun to think about the joint practices, you know, if like Steve Smith was still there, Jalen Ramsey versus Steve Smith for a whole week. But I don't know. I don't see really the whole benefit to it.
We'll see if the team feels the same way when that all comes, you know, gets solidified, because the rumors are out that it'll happen. We'll see if it all ends up happening, in which case maybe I'll have to plan a trip up to Baltimore if I can get the credentials for it. But thank you guys for tuning in to today's episode of Locked On Jaguars. Make sure to subscribe anywhere you can listen to podcasts. Say, hey, Alexa, play Locked On Jaguars, and it should work, pretty sure. Chris, I'm going to have you test that out in your Alexa right after, but that's a new feature that it looks like our network is moving towards, so make sure to check that out. We'll catch up with you guys next time.